Wallet talking about her new book, Pro Reclaiming Abortion Rights, and the ALEC Project, an investigation of Oregon legislation which has been influenced or created by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. So fight the power and support KABU. That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First, writer, historian, and activist Rebecca Solnit speaks on breaking stories. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints host Dennis Bernstein speaks with Nora Barrows-Friedman, host of the Electronic Intifada, about her new book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine. And at 11, Demay Roberts hosts a special one-hour stage and studio featuring the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Dreamgirls at Portland Center Stage and White Bird Dance's new international lineup of dance performances. Now, let's go to alternative radio.
But never forget that you are also a storyteller, that we live in stories the way fish swim in water, that we choose our stories if we can see them, that we are made of stories, and this can be a blessing or a curse, and is usually both at once as our lives unfold. Choose your stories carefully, listen to what has been silenced, learn to see the invisible, and remember that this era of tremendous change we're in is partly achieved by changing stories, by telling stories, by breaking stories and making stories.
That's Rebecca Solnit, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Rebecca Solnit on making and breaking stories. Dominant paradigms, dominant stories, the big picture through which our lives move. How much of it is constructed for us? Most of it. What are the prevailing paradigms and cultural narratives really made of? Words, language. To coin a phrase, define the terms, frame the issue, to write the story that sticks in the public mind and is constantly repeated, is the business of branding. Powerful institutions work day and night suppressing and spinning stories to legitimize their existence. Their machinations create official stories and public secrets, things that everybody knows but nobody says in public. Although our personal stories are assembled and disassembled at the rate of speedy electronic devices, our collective stories move at the rate of tectonic plates. Competing narratives about fracking in Colorado and tar sands in Alberta play out in daily information wars, while substantive structural changes remain nearly indiscernible. Our guest today is Rebecca Solnit. She's an award-winning essayist and environmental historian. She's the author of over a dozen books, including The Faraway Nearby, Savage Dreams, and Men Explain Things to Me. She spoke to a full house at Seattle's Town Hall. And now, Rebecca Solnit.
What's your story? It's all in the telling. Stories are compasses in architecture. We navigate by them. We build our sanctuaries and our prisons out of them. And to be without a story is to be lost in the vastness of a world that spreads in all directions, like Arctic tundra or sea ice. To love someone is to put yourself in their place, we say, which is to put yourself in their story, or to figure out how to tell yourself their story. Which means that a place is, first of all, a place is a story, and stories are geography, and empathy is first of all an act of imagination, a storyteller's art, and then a way of traveling from here to there. What is it like to be the old man silenced by a stroke, the young man facing the executioner, the woman walking across the border, the child on the roller coaster, the person you've only read about, or the one next to you in bed? We tell ourselves stories in order to live or to justify taking lives, even our own. by violence or by numbness and the failure to live. Tell ourselves stories that save us and stories that are the quicksand in which we thrash and the well in which we drown. Stories of justification, of accursedness, of luck and star-crossed love, or versions clad in the cynicism that is at times a very elegant garment. Sometimes the story collapses and it demands that we recognize we've been lost or terrible or ridiculous or just stuck. Sometimes change arrives like an ambulance or a supply drop. Not a few stories are sinking ships, and many of us go down with these ships even when the lifeboats are bobbing all around us. In the 1001 Nights, known in English as the Arabian Nights, Shahrazad tells stories in order to keep the Sultan in suspense from night to night, so he will not kill her. The premise of the vast thicket of stories is that the Sultan caught his queen in the embrace of a slave and decided to sleep with a virgin every night and slay her every morning so that he could not be cuckolded again. Shahrazad volunteered to try to end the massacre and did so by telling him stories that carried over from one night to the next for nights that stretched into years. She spun stories around him that kept him in a cocoon of anticipation from which he eventually emerged a less murderous man. In the course of all this telling, she bore 3 sons and delivered a labyrinth of stories within stories, stories of desire and deception and magic, of transformation and testing, stories in which the action in one freezes as another storyteller opens his mouth, pregnant stories, stories to stop death. Do you tell your story, or does it tell you? Often, too often, stories saddle us, ride us, whip us onward, tell us what to do, and we do it without questioning. The task of learning to be free requires learning to hear them, to question them, to pause and hear silence, to name them, and then become a storyteller. Those ex-virgins who died were inside the Sultan's story. Shahrazad, like a working-class hero, seized control of the means of production and talked her way out. Writers make stories, or so we think, but a lot of my work to date has also been about breaking stories, trying to take apart stories that no longer work, replace them or expose them. I'm a demolition man, though I think we called it deconstruction in the 1990s. 20 years ago, my second book came out, the first one in which I'd figured out who and where I was and how to write about it. Titled Savage Dreams, it was about that we imagine nuclear war as a terrible thing that might happen someday in the future. It was going on regularly, routinely, at the rate of a nuclear bomb explosion a month or so between 1951 and 1991. 1,000 nuclear bombs detonated at the Nevada test site, formerly known as the Atomic Proving Grounds in southern Nevada. And it was about the Indian Wars, which most of us had been told happened in the 19th century, and whether they are good or bad were part of our great-grandparents' era, not ours. But the Indian Wars, as I'm sure many of you here know, never stop. They are fought in courts and cultures and films and public signs and land ownership titles and place names, in what is said and what is silenced and suppressed. So it's a book about the wars that were supposed to be over but were still going on invisibly, about the wars that weren't supposed to have begun yet but were going on invisibly. They're about the things we don't look at because the stories we believe make them invisible. When I was growing up, there were 2 big stories about the North American landscape. One was that North America had been virgin wilderness. Yes, that creepy sexual term was used over and over and over. Virgin wilderness until conquistadors, explorers, and pilgrims had arrived. It was supposed to have been empty, a blank sheet of paper waiting for us to write our story on it, or not write on it at all. The environmental movement before the 1990s was one of the great promulgators of this story that wrote hundreds of native nations and thousands of years of human history out of the picture, denied their existence even in the past. This fantasy of virgin nature suggested that nature and culture were opposites and incompatible, since it only allowed the model in which culture, our kind of culture, ravaged nature, which is why you had to put fences around bits of it to preserve and say people didn't belong there at all. We called those bits national parks and wilderness preserves. They were good in their protection, but bad in their ideology and what they told us about who we were and what we could be.
You're listening to Rebecca Solnit on Making and Breaking Stories. This is Alternative Radio.
Hi, and you are tuned to KBOO's Fall Membership Fundraising Drive. The phone numbers we would love you to call is 877-500-5266. Or, in alternative to that, get yourself a computer, connect yourself to the World Wide Web, and go to kboo.fm, and you can find ways to become a member on there. Hi, this is Fortunato. I do the Monday Sampler, and I do a story show called Gremlin Time, and I'm here this morning to ask you to subscribe. We're asking for at least a $60 yearly subscription, and we can work out a different sort of payment plan for you. If you give us a call, 877-500-5266, and we need your support. This is listener-supported community radio. The crazy, wacky plan is we put on good radio that you'd like to listen to, and you like it so much that you will support us by becoming a member of our radio station. And that way we'll keep on the air, and we can continue to present the programs that you like to listen to. We'd like to thank, right now, Molly and Fred from Sandy, Oregon, and they have... I don't know, they didn't put down whether they re-upped or they're a new member, but they're supporting KBOO, and we want you to do that as well. A lot of people listen to KBOO who don't support it, who aren't members, and we need you to reconsider that. We need your support. We need everybody to chip in. There are programs that you don't get a chance to listen, or it's just not your taste or anything, but... the people who love to listen to those, they support the station, and they help support shows that you like to listen to. So everything kind of works out. So we want you to become a part of this. This is an experiment that we've been had going on since the late 60s. And let me see, as the part of our thank you gift for a $60 minimum pledge, I believe this is the CD. Or no, it's the book. It's Rebecca Solnit in her comic skating essay, Men Explain Things to Me. She takes on what often goes wrong in conversations between men and women. She wrote about men who wrongly assume they know things and wrongly assume women don't. You know, that's exactly why I don't date men. And about why this arises and how this aspect of gender wars works, airing some of her own hilariously awful encounters. And you can get this... I need to ask here on this. Hold on a sec. Excuse me, on this thank you gift. Is this a book or a CD? They're stymied back here. Please call in. We'll find out. It's a book. Yes.
That is a book.
It is a book. Oh, good. That'll last forever. You know, unlike those CDs, the things peel off. It's horrible. But it and the CDs, they're just player piano technology. But meanwhile, we want you to call us up here, 877-500-5266. We'll be back again to talk about more of this. But now let's return to this interesting little program about Rebecca Solnit and Scheherazade and storytelling.
The other big story we were told was that there had actually been Native people, but they'd all been vanished. That idea of the vanishing Indian was very popular from the early 19th century on. The last of the Mohicans, the end of the trail, Ishi, last of his tribe. There were many, many versions of inevitable doom, and many Native peoples who are still with us were said to be extinct, vanished, gone, in the past, non-existent. Native America, we were told, was in the past tense. In that book, Savage Dreams, I wrote about the nuclear wars and the Indian wars in Yosemite National Park, one of the most iconic, visible, visited natural places on Earth, whose original inhabitants were said in many different times and ways to have been vanished, removed, died out, been wiped out, moved on, and also to have never existed. Because a park sign back then said that the first human beings had gotten there in the 1850s, though human beings had been there for 5,000 years before. What does it mean when 1,000 nuclear bombs can go off inside the United States, and even anti-nuclear activists imagine nuclear war only as a terrible eventuality? What does it mean when the original inhabitants of this hemisphere are made invisible in one of the most visible places on Earth? In 1991, I talked to Jay Johnson, a forester for the Park Service, who was native to Yosemite Valley and had managed to live his whole life there, except for his military service. His people had become invisible, Johnson told me, and I put in the book this story that he told me. There's another example of people thinking there are no more Indians here today in the Smithsonian in Washington. I think it was 1980. Julia Parker and four of us on business for our tribe went to the Smithsonian and found the California Museum exhibits, then Yosemite. It's almost the same thing as the diorama in the park here. Down in the Smithsonian, it was on the wall, and it had a little statement on the side, and it left off with, "It's very sad today. There's no more Yosemite Indians," period. I said, "Let's go down, talk to the people at the desk about this statement." So we went down there, and this lady, she was at the desk, and I said, "Ma'am, about that diorama about Yosemite." She said, "Oh, isn't that nice?" And I said, "It's nice, but there's an error in the statement." And she says, "Oh, no, there can't be. Every little word goes through channels and committees and whatnot." And I says, "It's okay," but I says, "It tells me that there are no more Yosemite Indians today." So she says, "Well, that's true. It's very sad, but whatever's out there is true." So I say, "Well, I hate to disturb you, but I'm a Yosemite Indian and we're here on business for our tribe." And she caught her breath and said, "Oh, let me call somebody." What does it mean to be told to your face that you don't exist? Around the quincentennial of Columbus's arrival in the New World, people began to challenge more loudly the story that he was a great man who discovered the Americas, and we should celebrate that 500th anniversary. And through the power of stories, of breaking the old Colombian story of discovery, and making other insurgent stories more audible, more popular, more mainstream, they won a great battle. The beat poet Diane DePrima once said that the only war that matters is the war against the imagination. And they won that war big, or we won big, because I was part of it. It was a tremendously exciting time. Because if you told the story differently, then culture didn't have to be at odds with nature. Culture has existed pretty successfully with nature in this hemisphere for 10,000 years and more. If you told the story differently, the wars weren't over, injustices could still be righted, and there were still hopeful futures for some of them. If you told the story differently, much that had been hidden in darkness came to light. It changed everything, and it changed me. This was the first time I saw that people ordinarily imagine as powerless, radical historians, tribal activists, writers, storytellers, the old people who remembered, the young people who did something about those memories, could wield immense power. The power of the story, the power to break stories and to make new stories. For you younger people, what I've just said must sound obvious or strange or pointless, because you grew up after 1992, after we won that battle. School history books, Western movies, public signage, national park management, and ecological theory all changed in the United States after that. And it wasn't just in the U.S., it wasn't just in the stories, it wasn't just in the signage. Profound, huge things changed. Resurgent Native movements regained a colossal land base in Canada, the autonomous province of Nunavut, an area five times the size of Texas. After more than 500 years of domination by Europeans and their descendants, the largely indigenous population of Bolivia elected an indigenous leader, Evo Morales, still in power in a very different Bolivia than it was before his election. In 2000, the number of Native people on the U.S. Census doubled from what it had been in 1990, not because every Native American had a kid suddenly, but because people who had been hiding their identities, who'd been ashamed of it, who had been brushed aside, who hadn't even been told about it, were ready to claim that identity. So many things change, and like most change, it began in the imagination, began with making and breaking stories, and giving us spectacular new stories. For outsiders, non-Native people like me, bringing back the old stories, the creation stories, in which creation was never finished, was also something remarkable, something that changed my sense of the possible. In those old creation stories, the world was never perfect, just a work in progress. The creator was a coyote or a raven with a wild sense of humor, and there was no fall from grace, nothing to be redeemed, just a crazy experiment going on that we could all participate in. I learned so much from my work as an activist with the Western Shoshone fighting for their land rights, as a historian trying to disassemble the lies spun around Yosemite and see what had really happened there, as an activist in the anti-nuclear battles of the era. When I went back to Yosemite in 2001 for another project, just as 9/11 was unfolding in New York, I saw real changes in the landscape in which Jay Johnson and his people had been wiped out of visibility. I saw the practical consequences of changing the story. The way the park was presented to its visitors had changed. The native people were far more visible and had more rights than their homeland and a land base. And the way its natural systems were managed had also changed. Virgin nature had been imagined as static nature, and so for a century, forest fires had been suppressed with disastrous consequences. Smokey Bear was wrong, you know. That's a weird story we were told about how all, do put out your campfires, but not all fire is bad. Fire has been a huge part of the ecology of the Western United States, and Native people used fire as a land management tool. Fire had a role in healthy forest ecology. Those things became more widely known after 1992, and the Park Service began to use fire after a century of suppression. Everything had changed in the Yosemite I went back to. It made me hopeful amid the terrible reaction to 9/11, the encroachment on civil liberties and privacies that 9/11 was supposed to justify that began then and continue today.
You're listening to Rebecca Solnit on Making and Breaking Stories. This is Alternative Radio.
You're listening to Alternative Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. We're hearing about the power of stories, and KBOO provides the outlet for these stories to be preserved, to be brought to you, to be a part of our society. They shape our society. They really do have power. And here at KBOO, we want to give you the power to preserve these stories. As part of our fall membership drive, we're asking you to become a member right now at the $60 a year level. It sounds like a lot, but it's actually, if you could do $5 a month, then we can get you Men Explain Things to Me by Rebecca Solnit, this book. It's a comic, scathing essay in which Rebecca Solnit took on what often goes wrong in conversations between men and women. She touches on this a little bit in this talk that we're hearing, but as you can tell, she's a very poignant and very articulate writer and speaker. So do pick up a copy of Men Explain Things to Me, but your real gift is your community radio station, your university on the airwaves that you support with your $5 a month contribution. Maybe you could do $10 a month. Maybe you can increase, if you've got a $5 a month, increase it to $10 a month. A contribution to KBOO gives so much back to you. It preserves these stories in our society. It gives power and takes those stories, it gives them legs and puts them out to a wider audience. That's what KBOO is all about. 877-500-5266 is the number we want you to call. We're going to go back to Rebecca Solnit in just a minute, but we want you to call that number. My name is Jenka. I'm here with Matt this morning.
Hello. You know, we mentioned these fees, you know, like $60, $100. You know, we can work out a payment plan for you. As you said, we can do a $5 a month. That's like you could collect bottles and bring that in, do the bottle deposit version. But actually, people will set up a system to have money taken out from their account, a painless cashectomy. And all you got to do is to call up 877-500-5266. You can talk to the folks we got waiting here for you, and they can work something out. We can, for the $60 minimum pledge, We've got Men Explain Things to Me by Rebecca Solnit, whom we are listening to right now. And, boy, wonderful stories. Also, the background of what they call pre-Columbian America. A lot of misconceptions about that people are coming out. And it really was like a mirror of Europe for the amount of people that lived over here.
And the society, the complexities of the
societies. Many different societies, yes.
I mean, and here at KBOO, we actually have Native American programming. There's no other station in the region. That has Native American programming that takes Native American voices, says, here's your space, do what you want with it. It might have some tokenism, somebody who is a guest on a show or something like that, but no, KBOO does it. We're genuine about it. I mean, it's amazing. KBOO's got shows for every community in the Portland area. I mean, since 1968, KBOO's the real deal here. I mean, just really strongly based in the community. Don't look for a station that's got that kind of veneer of hipness. No, go into the core, into the heart. What is the station about? And if you look at KBOO, you will see KBOO's heart is pure.
And we've been presenting, like Jenka said, since the late 1960s, and we've had programs from different communities. We've had Vietnamese folk were doing a program here for a while, Lebanese folks. We've got shows that present music from the Netherlands and Italy on Sundays. So it not only extends to the public affairs programs, but we do public affairs and we do music and entertainment.
I mean, we had volunteers here all night long doing a tribute to Sun Ra on the Sun Ra Centenary. I mean, that was last night. How much devotion does that take? To stay up all night just to try and reach the ninth dimension and understand the depth of Sun Ra. And there's going to be a John Lennon special, all-nighter, later this week. I mean, these are really dedicated volunteers. And, you know, amazingly, this audio archive that we have, the stories that KBOO has preserved in our back rooms, one of the projects that we're raising money for right now is actually to preserve those gems. We've got thousands of hours of reel-to-reel recordings from 1968 onwards. So if you support us at the $60, $100, maybe you could give $500, all of those add up to help pay for the many, many things that this station provides, including the preservation of these stories.
We've got a copy still of my presentation of the Lobster Quadrille from Alice in Wonderland.
We have Dick Gregory. We've got, just so many voices.
Really, it's amazing stuff of people that we've recorded here at the station. And we can only do that. We can only present these and preserve them with your support. And that's why we're able to do that. We're not part of any institution or university or anything like that. We're just this group here that runs KBOO. And we do it by the support of listeners like you. So we need you to go to the phone, 877-500-5266, or go to kboo.fm. And you can, as Jenka says on the website, just click on the tip jar.
Just click on the tip jar. It's that easy to do. kboo.fm, 877-500-KBOO.
My 2004 book, Hope in the Dark, arose out of the first response to the 2003 war in Iraq, to activists' despair that they had not been able to stop the war. Many people spun stories of defeat around themselves, the way a spider wraps her thread around her prey, render themselves helpless and despondent by telling themselves we were powerless, or that we had lost, that we had always lost, that we had no power and no victories behind us and nothing to look forward to. They were right that we had not stopped the war, but we had delayed it and changed its shape, as some countries, because of activists, decided not to participate, as we challenged its premises and kept questioning its purpose and its cost in money and, more importantly, in human lives, Iraqi lives as well as American lives. More than that, radicals, progressives, grassroots movements, story breakers, people who are supposed to have no power, have often had much power, and we have many victories behind us. The world has changed so much in my half century in it. I was born into a world in which to be gay or lesbian was to be treated as mentally ill or criminal or both, in which wives were imagined as property of their husband and regarded as such by the law, and which things that we now recognize legally and socially, such as sexual harassment, gender discrimination, domestic violence, marital rape, and a host of other evils, were unnamed and largely legal, in which the civil rights movement was at work, but most of its victories had yet to come, in which federal policy was actively trying to destroy the Native nations and cultures by dispersing their people and erasing their culture, in which there was little awareness and less language to discuss or even think about the environment. Rights and privileges in that world I was born into were granted to only a very few, and yet the tremendous injustice was largely invisible till those who had been silenced spoke up, and their speaking up began to change the story. In human rights struggles, you win change in part by making the status quo intolerable. Jim Crow, men-only Ivy League colleges in the East, segregated colleges in the South, massive legal discrimination against almost everyone except straight white Christian men. It was all taken on, and some of it was changed. A lot of it was changed profoundly. The world we live in is so radically different than it was 50 years ago. Because people stood up, because they fought, because they refused to accept as inevitable or eternal these things that human beings had created and that human beings could change. The world we live in is so radically different, but because we are not a storytelling people, because the young don't hear much from the old, and because even the old tend to forget how much it's all changed, we can talk as though our society is static, as conditions are a given, and we are powerless to change. Economic inequality has gotten worse, far, far worse in the last 35 years since Reagan was elected, but amnesia also erases memory of how few homeless people there were, of how cheap a college education used to be, how well-functioning many social networks were for healthcare, for education, for housing, for finance, for a reasonable payment of taxes, how hopeful many American lives were that are now burdened by debt and sapped by the vast economic inequality that sequesters so much of our wealth for the few and not the many. But we are at last talking about it, thanks to Occupy Wall Street in 2011, thanks to Thomas Piketty's surprise bestseller, Capital in the 21st Century, thanks to protests going on right now by Walmart and fast food workers. Maybe it's thanks to that conversation and to hope, as well as a brilliant five-month campaign, that Seattle has just raised the minimum wage to something that begins to approach a livable wage and doubles what it was nationwide, or what it is nationwide. First, there had to be a story that made it clear how horrific it is to pay people working full-time far less than they could possibly live on. Then there needs to be a story that things can be different. Seattle evidently told these stories powerfully, and not only will local people benefit, but the achievement may have national consequences. This may be a catalyst in the struggle for a national living wage, because change, like hope, like love, is contagious. I began writing about hope with these two premises, that we have many, many victories that are not remembered and celebrated, and that change does not always work in direct and obvious and immediate ways. Sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's sidelong, sometimes it doesn't look like anything. In the environmental movement in particular, victory is what doesn't happen, the wilderness that doesn't become sprawl, the species that don't go extinct, the children that don't get asthma from the coal plant that doesn't get built, the pipeline that doesn't tear up Nebraska and the climate and enrich a few men, and more broadly, the immigrants who don't get deported, the war that doesn't start, the violence that doesn't happen. Who remembers what the World Trade Organization might have looked like if we'd not come to Seattle 15 years ago this coming November and said no to giving the world away and all our power to the corporations? Who remembers what didn't happen because we stood up or stood together or changed the story? So many victories look like nothing because all you get out of them is a story of what could have been terrible and isn't. Stories are how we meet, how we know each other. How can I know your heartbreak or your headache or your history unless we speak, unless I listen, unless you tell? We so often don't know the past, don't know our own past, know how the world has changed, because we don't talk across lines enough, the lines of age in particular. I am old enough to have heard stories from World War II prisoners in Japanese camps and Japanese American internment camps, To have known Western Shoshone elders who told me that their grandmother remembered when the first white people come. I've met an old man who as a child met a beggar who survived the potato famine in Ireland in the 1840s. If you pass stories down, if you listen to stories, the past is not so far away. I've met the grandchildren of slaves, I've met people who remember those born in slavery. Even the 1850s are not that far behind us if we look back, if we talk, if we remember, if we respect our elders by listening to them, or by forcing them to tell the stories that they don't think of or that sometimes they don't want to tell. Who here remembers that June 4th was the 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre? But more than that, the anniversary of one of the great revolutionary years is upon us. Because the student uprising was suppressed in China, but nonviolent civil societies toppled the Soviet bloc regimes in Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and East Germany. Who remembers that before those upheavals, the Cold War seemed as immortal as the Soviet Union? Who remembers how much nonviolence has changed the world in other places, in South America, Central America, the Philippines, as well as Europe, as well as North America? Who remembers how dramatically the world has changed again and again? Who has the stories, those stories like milestones and measuring tapes? The world changes. It just changed in a big, deep way, one we can't measure yet, but one that I think matters. 13 days ago, a man who hated women, who seemed to have no natural immunities to all the worst, most pervasive stories of what constitutes happiness and what it means to be a man and what woman owes men, what woman owe men and what his rights were, went on a rampage. At the end, 7 people were dead, including the killer, and almost twice that many injured. Though fortunately, the women at the sorority he aspired to massacre were too wise or too scared to open the door to him when he banged on it. All the usual containment stories appeared. This was aberrant, this was mental illness, etc., as though this was committed by a space alien rather than one of us, rather than someone poisoned by an overdose of stereotypes, entitlements, and unrealistic expectations and ugly worldviews in our culture, as though there hadn't been more than 40 school shootings since Sandy Hook in late 2012, 71 mass murder rampages in this country in recent decades, 70 of those 71 by men, most of them by white men, 40% of them initially targeting a girlfriend, wife, or ex-wife. The mainstream story was that this had nothing to do with anything else, that this didn't demand we examine our culture, that there wasn't something fundamentally flawed that needed to change, that it was just an aberration, just a crazy guy, just that it had nothing to do with anything. We broke that story. Women were tired of the violence, tired of the mainstream narrative, trying very, very hard not to connect the dots. The dots like bullet holes, the dots like blood stains bleeding together, the dots that were easy and obvious to connect. And soon the conversation by women about violence had outstripped the massacre and become a broad conversation about what the violence all women face every day, the threats of violence, the intimidations, the silencings and exclusions, and the rape, the murder, the domestic violence, the harassment. The hashtag #YesAllWomen was born the day after the killings, although I regret to say that the woman who created it has since withdrawn into silence, because like so many women on Twitter, the level of hostility, of hate, of threat against her was apparently too much to bear. But nevertheless, the hashtag #YesAllWomen let people tell their stories, share their opinions, and critique our culture. And within 48 hours, 500,000 tweets had been sent with that hashtag, more than 1 million to date. Hundreds of related stories appeared in the media, ferocious testimony and cultural criticism by women, unprecedented engagement by men. Something was changing. We were breaking the story in both senses. We're breaking all the excuses and obfuscations around sexual violence and misogyny. A bigger we than ever before was looking at it and talking about it. And we were breaking the story, getting out word at last of how pervasive and how destructive these things are and where they come from. We had talked about rape culture after the hideous sexual violence in Steubenville in New Delhi 18 months before, in a new way, thanks to feminist voices and campus anti-rape activists in particular. Now we're talking about sexual entitlement, an important new phrase in the conversation about what's wrong with this culture, about where this hate and this dehumanization come from. I was riveted. Women were speaking out as we never have before about what it's like to live your whole life under threat, to be targeted with hate by strangers who want to hurt you, not because of anything you've done, but because of what and who you are, because they hate your whole category, to deal with all that and have it be invisible, unnamed, smoothed over, trivialized. Something broke in this country. It broke open and a torrential flood of women's stories poured out.
You're listening to Rebecca Solnit on Making and Breaking Stories. This is Alternative Radio.
You're listening to Alternative Radio on KBOO. You're listening to Rebecca Solnit talking about the stories that we tell, how they shape our society, and saying, I am not afraid anymore, how so many women came together under that Yes All Women hashtag to change the story of our society, to change the story of the discourse. That's what KBOO is doing. Since 1968, this station has been here changing the flow of the discourse in the Portland area and really throughout the country and the world. This station has had an impact far beyond just this area. KBOO is the real deal. Join in this cycle of regeneration, this cycle of continuous creation. Be a part of the KBOO ecosystem. And if you give $60 or above, you can get Rebecca Solnit's book, Men Explain Things to Me. And that could be a monthly deduction, $5 a month out of your checking account. It's so easy to set up. You just decide what's the easiest way for you, whether it's $5 or $10 a month. Call now, 877-500-5266. My name is Jinka. I'm here with Matt Clark.
Hey. And for those of you who are listening on the internet, you'll also notice on that same page at kboo.fm, there are directions that you can, there's buttons you can push to get to subscribing through the internet. And so we can do it that way. But we really like you to call. We'd like to hear the phones ring, 877-500-5266. And we want to thank Sonia, way out in the wilds of Hood River. She's a new member.
Thank
out
you, Sonia.
There. Hood River, that's a crazy town. It's like a beach town now with all the windsurfing there. All they need is like bumper cars on the main street. They'll be like seaside.
And what they don't need is a water privatization scheme
and a coal train terminal
that we've been reporting about on the news. So if you appreciate that, the fact that we're reporting on what's going on over there in Hood River, let's hear from some more folks out in the gorge, some folks down in Corvallis. Maybe you're in Gresham, or maybe you're right here in Portland. Maybe you're in Northeast or North Portland. Let's hear from our listeners. You are there. You're important. You are smart, beautiful. You are intellectually astute, critical thinker, because you listen to KBOO on a regular basis. And now we want you to be a part of it and tell that talking heads over there at Fox News, no, I am not afraid anymore. Tell the NSA, I am not afraid anymore. I'm going to be a contributor to KBOO, and I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to be a contributor. I'm going to contribute to these stories. I'm going to make sure that this type of discourse keeps on happening. And you know what? KBOO will protect your information. We keep it safe and secure right here. And you will then discover the world of KBOO, that radio really sounds better. 877-500-5266. When you become a member, the station, the radio wave sounds
rolling,
better.
Rolling on. And you feel better, too. You wake up in the morning, I'm a member of KBOO. I'm not just stealing listening to the station. I'm a member. I'm helping it go on. And that's how we keep, that's how we've been going on for all these years. It's your support. And so we need you to go to the phone. Pick up your phone right now and give us a call. 877-500-5266. We really need your support.
In 1963, Betty Friedan published a landmark book, The Feminine Mystique, in which she wrote, "The problem that has no name, which is simply the fact that American women are kept from growing to their full human capacities, is taking a far greater toll on the physical and mental health of our country than any known disease." In the years that followed her 1963 book, now 51 years old, that problem gained several names: male chauvinism, then sexism, misogyny, inequality, and oppression. The cure was first to be woman's liberation or woman's lib or feminism. Those words which might seem worn out from use now were fresh and new then. Since Friedan's manifesto, feminism has proceeded in part by naming things. The term sexual harassment, for example, was coined in the 1970s, first used in the United States legal system in the 1980s, given legal status by the Supreme Court in 1986, and only given widespread coverage in the upheaval after Anita Hill's testimony against her former boss, Clarence Thomas, in the 1991 Senate hearings on his Supreme Court nomination. The all-male interrogation team patronized and bullied Anita Hill, while many men in the Senate and elsewhere failed to grasp why it mattered if your boss said lecherous things and demanded sexual services, or they just denied such things happen. Many women were outraged. It was like the post-Isla Vista week, a watershed moment in which the conversation changed, which those who got it pushed hard on those who didn't, opening some minds and updating some ideas. Sexual harassment is now considerably less common in workplaces and schools because the laws against it are enforced, because people know that it's wrong. And its victims have far more recourse, thanks in part to Anita Hill's brave testimony and the earthquake that followed. She broke the story. So many of the words with which a woman's right to exist are adjudicated are of recent coinage. Domestic violence, for example, replaced wife beating as the law began to take a mild interest in the subject in the 1970s. In 1990, the Journal of the American Medical Association reported, "Studies of the Surgeon General's office reveal that domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women between the ages of 15 and 44, more than automobile accidents, muggings, and cancer deaths combined." So, although Bredi Friedan thought the problem that has no name is taking a far greater toll on the physical and mental health of our country than any known disease, we weren't even talking about domestic violence then and street violence and harassment and threat. We are now, and the fact that it's the leading cause of injury to women between the ages of 15 and 44 in this country, still 24 years after that American Medical Association report, is pretty shocking and something we should be talking about. We need to talk about it as part of doing something about it. We need to get it out of the closet, and we need to make it something a man would be ashamed to do, something a man would look askance on other men if he did, something that we make as disgusting as racism is to most of us, something that this culture doesn't joke about and tolerate and turn a blind eye to. It may be changing now. In human rights struggles, you win change in part by making the status quo intolerable or showing how intolerable it is for many of the people in it. You shine a light into the dark places of the status quo. You demand room or make room for the voices of the voiceless. You can use the power of words to bury meaning or to excavate it. If you lack words for a phenomenon, an emotion, a situation, you can't talk about it, which means you can't come together to address it, let alone change it. The term sexual entitlement was used in 2012 in reference to sexual assaults by Boston University's hockey team, though you can find earlier uses of the phrase. I first heard it in 2013 in a BBC report on a study of rape in Asia. The study concluded that in many cases, most cases, the motive for rape isn't the uncontrollable passion and all the other things that we're always told. It's the idea that a man has the right to have sex with a woman, regardless of her desires. In other words, his rights trump hers, or she has none. This sense of being owed sex is everywhere. Many women are told, as I was in my youth, that something we did or said or wore, just the way we looked or the fact that we were female or in the room, had excited desires we were thereby contractually obliged to satisfy. We owed them. They had a right to us, and we had no rights. If you look back to Bredi Friedan's Problem That Has No Name, you see a world that was profoundly different than the one we live in now, one in which women had far fewer rights and far less voice. Back then, arguing that women should be equal was a marginal position. Now, arguing that we should not be is marginal in this part of the world, and the law is mostly on our side, though getting it respected and enforced is another story at times. The struggle has been and will be long and harsh and sometimes ugly, and the backlash against feminism remains savage, strong, and omnipresent, but it is not winning, and I don't believe it will win. Henry David Thoreau wanted to be appointed inspector of snowstorms. I felt that way about thunderstorms, but I think one of my jobs has turned out to be inspector of broad, slow social change. Because these changes don't fit into a snapshot or a soundbite or a news cycle or the dumbed-down frameworks and cliches we get or the tendency of people to reinforce the status quo by pretending it isn't some social construct that's changing all the time and that serves some people and disserves others, that this is just how it's always been and how it will always be. You can't see change if you don't look into the past to have a benchmark of how things have changed, if you don't pull back to see the big patterns that spread across years and decades and sometimes centuries. But most of all, the great patterns that have given me hope were only visible on this larger scale.
You're listening to Rebecca Solnit on Making and Breaking Stories. This is Alternative Radio.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive and fundraiser. The number here we'd like you to call is 877-500-5266 or go on to the interwebs and go to kboo.fm and you can follow the directions and you too can become a member of Community Radio. That's how we keep things going. This is listener-supported radio, and we keep things going with having listeners like yourself become a member. We have a $60 minimum membership.
Well, $60 if you want to get a thank you gift. It's actually $40 is the basic membership, and $20 is a low-income membership, so
yes.
If that's what's doable for you.
We can work it out. We can work things out.
Yeah, just call up and talk. Yeah, you can arrange something. You could do $20 a month. You could do $5 a month. Maybe you're someone who has the means to do something like $50 or $100 a month or a contribution all at once of $1,000 or $1,500. And maybe you're someone who could give $20, our low-income membership. All of those then add up to KBOO's budget. You know, we've got $500 to raise in the next 9 minutes. I know that we can do that. People have been just riveted by Rebecca Solnit, as I
wonderful
have.
Program.
Pick up a copy of her book. Share that, read it, and really connect to her words and her story that she's telling here. And you can get that for $5 a month contribution to KBOO, 877-500-5266. You know, as you're drawn in by this talk by Rebecca Solnit that we have a few more minutes of, we're going to play in just a couple of minutes, just think about how do you use the power of words? Do you use them like people like Lars Larson, Rush Limbaugh on the right side of the dial to spit vitriol, stereotypes, hatred, or do you use words in the way that KBOO does to bring people together in a movement of movements in solidarity with others? Do you use words to have power that really can make change and make a difference in your community and your world? If you believe in what KBOO does, maybe you don't agree with everything that's ever on the radio, but you agree with the mission of KBOO, providing a voice for the voiceless, being a base in your community, then I want you to support that station, our station, your station, $5 a month, $10 a month. Think about it. Can you do that? Can you budget it in? I know money's tight for everybody, but guess what? $5 or $10 a month is totally doable. Even if you're on a fixed income, you can make that happen. And you can then be one of the many, many contributors to KBOO. All of us coming together, make this happen. 877-500-5266. It also allows us to remain independent. The fact that we have
totally
5,000 different bosses. We don't have one big corporate sponsor that we're then beholden to tell us what we can and can't put on the air. We have that capability to be independent because of the diversity and the number of our contributors. So let's keep that model going, and you are the one that can do it. You can help us reach our goal, 877-500-5266. We can do this with your support.
This just in, Jenka. Lori out in Southwest Portland has become a member of KBOO. Has called us up. We need you to call us up right now, 877-500-5266. We all chip in. We all make the shows go here at KBOO. We present Public Affairs Show. We present the news program that Jenka herself works on every day diligently. She's working on it right now, in fact. And we present the different music shows. So people come in with the type of music they like to listen to, a whole crateful usually, and they present it to you. And we have kids who come in all night, and they're doing all sorts of mixes. So we present music, we present public affairs, we present news, all here under one roof. And we can only keep that roof up if you call us right now at 877-500-5266 and become a member of Community Radio, listener-supported, KBOO Portland. Once again, for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get the book by the woman who's speaking right now, Rebecca Solnit, her book, Men Explains Things to Me. $60 pledge, and that can be yours here. So call us up right now. What's that number again, Jenka?
877-500-KBOO. If you need to keep it in your head while you pull over, or you know maybe you need to wait till you take a break from what you're doing, but keep that number, think about it, and then when you get a chance, when next time you pull that phone out of your pocket, make this the first thing that you do. 877-500-KBOO. You know, we've also got the Chinook book for a $90 contribution. We've got a 4-gig audio flash drive filled with exclusive KBOO content. 100 hours of amazing stories like this. And that's a $75 minimum donation. And those all can be split up into the monthly deduction. So if you can do that, $5 a month, $10 a month, let's see, $90 a year comes down to $1.73 a day. And it is a 100, let's see, it is... if you can give $90 a year, that's $750 a month. See, I can do math. $750 a month, and that Chinook book can be yours. If you can do the $75 a year, that's $6.25 a month. You get the 4-gig audio flash drive. You get to your Democracy Now! T-shirt. You just talk to the person on the phone, and they'll explain everything to you, and it's so easy to set up and do. And please, please call right now. Help reach our goal for this hour, and do pick up the book, maybe. Men Explain Things to Me, $5 a month. 877-500-5266. Call right now.
My work is also about breaking the story in both senses. Another one of my books, it's very much about breaking the story, is A Paradise Built in Hell, The Extraordinary Communities That Arise in Disaster. And that arose out of my discovery that amazing sociological research had been done that demonstrates that actually pretty much everything we've ever been told about how we behave in disasters is wrong. The assumption reinforced by every stupid Hollywood movie you've ever seen is that pretty much everyone of my gender will panic and kind of become hysterical like a flock of stampeding sheep. We'll trample ourselves and others and become paralyzed and unable to make good decisions or do anything at all. And then Tom Cruise or Charlton Heston will rescue us. So that's my gender, and that's pretty humiliating. But your gender, you guys out there, because you're going to go straight for raping and looting and plundering. We're all going to become animals. Some of us will be wolves. Some of us will be sheep. And that's an assumption that has a lot of interesting consequences. It means that officials making disaster response plans have tended to assume that social Darwinism will rear its ugly head, that it will be a sort of war of each against each. Social Darwinism, Hobbes, all those ugly visions of who we are. And that also means that they will essentially need to take the city back, as they said in Katrina, that they will need to crack down, that they will turn a humanitarian catastrophe into a military or police exercise of power because they believe we're out of control. And, you know, and this belief serves some people. It serves authorities in particular because it suggests that without them, we're monsters. Without them, we're nothing. You know that without you, I'm nothing thing? That's what they think about us. Without them, we're nothing. And without them, we're really something. More than 60 years of remarkable on-site research in disasters has demonstrated that most people are calm, resourceful, altruistic, generous, deeply communitarian, pretty good at improvising, and that we actually rescue each other, take care of each other, improvise temporary communities. And not only that, but we often take great pleasure and satisfaction in doing so.
Well, that looks like it's the end of Alternative Radio, and that was Rebecca Solnick. Thanks for listening, and thanks, members, for supporting KBOO Portland. The time is 9:58. Coming up at 10:15, Flashpoints host Dennis Bernstein speaks with Nora Barrows-Friedman, host of the Electronic Intifada, about her new book, In Our Power, U.S. Students Organize for Justice in Palestine. And at 11, Dimae Roberts hosts a special one-hour stage and studio featuring the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Dreamgirls at Portland Center Stage and White Bird Dance's new international lineup of dance performances. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following these announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 10th at 5:30 p.m. The event includes live music, local artists, a live and silent auction, and more, and takes place at Holocene. The Gifford Pinchot Task Force mission is to protect and sustain the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and neighboring communities through conservation, science, and advocacy. Again, that's Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 10th, 5:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Sings Out, a benefit concert for the Yes on Measure 92 campaign. On Sunday, October 12th at 5 p.m., a diverse collection of Portland musicians will be putting on an evening of revitalized protest classics and creative original songs of revolution. Performers include Zia McCabe and Courtney Taylor Taylor of the Dandy Warhols, Jeremy Wilson of the Dharma Bums, KBOO's Mike Crenshaw, and many, many more. Again, Portland Sings Out will take place Sunday, October 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from McMiniman's Crystal Ballroom, presenting an evening with Leftover Salmon featuring Bill Payne of Little Feet and Kyle Hollingsworth of the String Cheese Incident, Friday, October 10th. Tickets and information for this all-ages show at crystalballroompdx.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate.